Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, where we bring creativity and transformation under one roof, and we focus on one thing, business, your business, the business you work for, the company you'd like to start, the company you are already working on that's not doing exactly what you want or it's doing more than you ever anticipated, and those are good problems to have. So here at The Creative Alchemist, every week we have a guest, and our guest always has a specific expertise. We've talked about finance, leadership, project management, health, entrepreneurship from different perspectives, and tonight, well, it will be no different. We have a great guest coming in, and she's going to talk to you about some very interesting things. If you would like to call in and engage her and ask questions, the phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640, and this is live, so you will be able to ask anything. Just listen out. Lori and I are going to ask her some questions. We'll interview her, and you'll be able to call in and ask anything you like. Before we introduce our guest, you know I never take this journey alone. You have to meet my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hi, everybody, and it's a pleasure to be back. Looking forward to the holidays. It's Lori Miller from LGC Interior Design. And we're almost close to 2,000 listeners, so thank you, everyone. Super exciting. Let's bring it into 3,000 for next year or more, right? Let's pass on the love. Tonight's guest, super special. She and I, actually, when we spoke, had a really lot in common. So tonight we're going to meet Allison Pigeon from Move Forward Counseling. But Allison does not have just a counseling practice. She was a solo mental health practitioner, scaled to a growing group practice, business consultant, and even helps her clinicians design their office spaces. So as you can see, we had a lot more in common than meets the eye. So between the design and the counseling, should have an excellent evening tonight, and we're going to teach you how to grow your business the right way. So Allison, tell people a little bit about you, and you're on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. Yeah, that was a great introduction. I appreciate it. I was trained as a mental health clinician and kind of worked my way up through a community mental health agency and decided to leave in 2015 and start my own practice. And always thought when I was younger that I would have a business, but got interested in psychology and kind of went, you know, the traditional route of, you know, graduate school and getting my license and all of those kinds of things. So when I started looking into all the things that it took to run a business, I just fell in love with all of it. And I decided to start a group practice. And then I got into business consulting. And then I started a virtual assistant company. And then I bought a building for my counseling practice. And then the latest thing I'm doing is a website called TheraSuite, which is a resource for therapists who need to furnish and decorate their office. Like, items are curated mm-hmm. for them so that they can easily get things that they need to put their office together.
Such a fabulous concept. It really
Thank
is
you.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's been fun to work on because that's one of my hobbies is interior design. I've always enjoyed, you know, like decorating my house. And then when we were growing as a group practice, you know, every time we expanded, we had to get a new office. And, of course, I had to decorate it and had a designer come help me do that and just loved the whole process and learned a lot of kind of tips and tricks along the way. So kind of put that all together into TheraSuite.
It's really just a phenomenal concept. Because, you know, a lot of therapists, right, it's so important to have your office comfortable and to have people sit down and, you know, to just kind of walk in and feel like things are cohesive because that's one of the biggest things, you know, that we say clutter clearing or if things aren't in place, right, it just doesn't help your mental health.
Right. So right. Yeah, it's so important to have that nice calming environment for your clients.
Right. And for you to put that together so that you don't, you know, it's one less thing that you have to think about when you're renting an office is amazing. Or when you're buying an office or whatever you're doing with an office, right?
Right, so, right. Yep, exactly.
It's amazing. And you also are a therapy, like a consultant for therapists.
Yes. Yeah, so I started working for Practice of the Practice, which is a consulting company based out of Michigan, back in 2016, and have really developed a niche around helping people start group practices, and now have a membership community around that, and we have another membership community, which is more established group practice owners, so kind of helping them navigate the journey of, like, continuing to scale up their business and all the challenges that, you know, come along with owning a group practice, so it's so fun to watch people like learn and grow and build their businesses. And we're really big on, you know, helping people also achieve their lifestyle goals. So we talk a lot about, you know, like working less, but still making the same or more money so that you can, you know, have time to devote to the things that are really important to you. For me, that's being a mom. I have three kids. I'm very big on, you know, like delegating and making sure there's, you know, time for my family. And that's really one of the big reasons why I started my own business to begin with.
Wow, that's really, so that's a lot too. So you have three kids, right?
I do,
and
yes.
So you take care of things at home, and then you have the consulting, and then you have the count. Now, do you do private clients also?
I don't see clients anymore for counseling. When I had my third child back in 2019, I decided to retire. So that was a good decision, and I fully stepped into, like, the CEO role of running the practice.
Right, which is right, and that takes up enough space as well.
Yes.
That has its own set of issues.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you still have the group practice, which is a lot, and then, you know, now you have this design piece too, which is significant.
Yeah,
and then
I was just going to say, I think, you know, the one of the keys to my success has really just been, you know, like building a good team and delegating and having, you know, kind of systems in place so that you can still make sure things are running smoothly. But I just have my staff is amazing. Like, I couldn't do it without them. I think that's just the key to the whole thing is, like, you have to delegate and you have to have great employees.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So I was going to jump ahead a little bit to your questionnaire or your quiz that's on your site, which I thought was so, also, again, it was so incredibly accurate. Right. And
what was your design style?
I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was somehow like a little, I forgot what you had. It was something in the traditional realm, but it wasn't quite like overly traditional. So, and it was like, oh my God, yes, I am in that mix. And I am like, you know, so it was pretty funny.
Nice.
But where did you come up with that? I mean, it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So I think a lot of times when I'm coming up with a business idea, like, you know, you just don't sort of pull it thin air. Like, you get inspiration from seeing other things. And so I was familiar with websites like Havenly.com or Modsy.com, where you would go and, like, let's say you wanted to, like, redo your living room, and you go on there and have a designer help you pick things out, and you just get things shipped to your house. So that was really where the idea came from, but obviously with the twist of for office spaces, and specifically therapy office spaces, because I realized that there was just certain things in office spaces that we need that I think most people don't realize if you don't work in the field. Like, you need a clock. You need to be able to see a clock. You need to make sure the walls are soundproof, like all these things that your typical sort of office dweller isn't going to be aware of. So it's really just, you know, seeing those other websites and sort of how they were presenting their product and then just kind of translating it to my, you know, specific niche.
Right. Which is great because on your website, it engages people. It makes them want to purchase from you. Right. And it helps them identify or narrow in or narrow down, depending on like what English, what part of the language you want to use. But, you know, where their style is or it engages them. And,
yeah,
you know, obviously when you're running a business.
Right. I had done some research on quizzes and there's like huge, you know, data to show that like quizzes really help convert customers. And people will like go through the whole process to find out what their result is of the quiz. And so I think just the subject matter like lends itself perfectly to taking a quiz because if you're, you know, on the site, it's probably because you A, either have no time or B, you have no clue what you like and you just want somebody to pick out stuff for you. So yeah, it works really well.
Yeah, or you're just curious, and then you're still wrapped up in it.
Right.
It's like, ooh, do I really have a style? Am I going to like something over one thing? Yep, exactly, which is perfect. So I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead. Ted and I fight over this all the time.
Is your target market, your clients, 100% mental health professionals?
Yeah, right now for that website, that's really what I'm aiming for. But I think it could also be expanded to other types of healthcare professionals, or even maybe just people who, you know, we have like a home office section on there, and it's interesting because we just started our Pinterest page. And I have a blog post that says how I turned my dining room into a home office. And that's been the most clicked on pin that we've had so far.
Wow. Hmm. Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So,
no one needs a dining room anymore. They need a home office though.
Yes.
So are there, you know, I was listening to Lori say, you know, mental health professionals, they need to be cognizant of how they set up their office. And you were saying you need a clock. There's certain things they may need. Are there really huge differences between, let's say a mental health professional, how their office is set up and how someone's, let's say, I'm going to give you three buckets, how someone's dining room is set up for a home office, or someone having you do work in their office in a office building? I mean, are there huge differences between those three?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is and there isn't. So one of the big differences is, you know, if you have a home office and you're the only one who's in there and maybe you're just doing like teletherapy sessions all day, like, there's going to be certain parts of the room that your client sees because whatever's behind you is what they're going to see, but they may not see the rest of the office. So like I have more like personal pictures and things that I can see from where I'm sitting, but the client couldn't see it because I have my computer face the other way. So those are just some minor things. But I think too, like if you have an office space where a client is coming in, like, you want that to be part of the whole experience for them. You know, unfortunately, I think mental health has a reputation for, you know, typically being underfunded. And I think, you know, the environment then where the therapy takes place reflects that. And I think, you know, people want to come in and just feel like it's clean, it's calming, it's not cluttered. Like there's all this interesting research about how, you know, like clutter and, you know, things that may have like sharp points and things like that, like actually cause people to have anxiety. So I think we don't always think about how does the environment affect the client. We're just so focused on delivering the treatment. But I think the environment is huge, because when I've set up office spaces, we get so many comments from people like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. I always feel so relaxed when I'm here. I think it helps make the process of coming to therapy a little bit easier, you know, like taking that step to come to therapy and make that appointment is really hard. And at least like the office could be nice, you know?
Right. Right. What about people outside of mental health? Is there a contrast between how you set up their offices and someone outside of mental health?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like what I was saying before about all the research with, you know, things that can make people anxious, like the color yellow, they recommend, like, don't paint your wall yellow and don't have lots of, like, pointy objects in the office. Like, we had a couple of paintings that the designer had picked out that were very abstract, and they had, like, jaggedy edges, like, throughout the whole painting. And the first week we hung them up, the clients kept saying, oh my gosh, that picture makes me anxious. Like, I have never gotten so many comments about a piece of artwork that was hung up in the office, but we took them down because they made people so anxious.
And this was a healthcare practitioner or non-healthcare?
Yes. This was a therapy office.
I was asking two questions. You said yes. I don't know to which one.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe you don't have to put in as much thought into those kinds of things if you had a financial services office or you had a law office or whatever. But I think there is a growing trend towards, you know, less of that sort of like very commercial type furniture that seems sort of sterile, and more to like setting up waiting rooms and office spaces that feel like homey and like more like a living room setup.
Okay. So converting one living room is a natural transition then, huh?
Converting someone's dining room?
Oh, dining room, right. You said dining room, right. That's a natural transition.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting just, you know, trends with houses and, you know, our house was built 30 plus years ago, and, you know, it has a formal dining room, and it has a, you know, then it has an eat-in kitchen. And so it's like, okay, why do we have this eat-in kitchen when we already have the kitchen table and I need an office, and this is, you know, the most logical place to put it. So that's what we did, because otherwise you're just using that room like a couple times a year.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Lori, you were going to ask something?
Yeah, I was going to ask about the consulting part of the business and kind of, you know, how you enroll people and how you get them and how, you know, how that works for you and if that to you is like having a counseling practice.
Oh, no, it's very different. It's a very different business. Yeah. So we have a podcast. So I have a podcast called Grow a Group Practice, and then Practice of the Practice has their own podcast. And we put on webinars and things. So people kind of get to know us through the podcast and the webinars. And then they, you know, get on our email list, and depending on if we're offering something that is a good fit for them, they'll join one of our membership communities. So it's like teaching, and it's a little bit like counseling, except what's great about it is like you can just say exactly what you think they should do. Like, whereas in counseling, you kind of just can't come right out and say like, you should leave your husband because he sounds like a jerk. Like, as a business consultant, I can be like, why are you doing that? That's really stupid. You're wasting a bunch of money on this, which is really nice,
right?
To be able to be that honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's so, you know, that, again, is interesting, right? Because it's also, you know, it's all about engaging people, and it's all about listening, and it's all about giving people what they want, but in a way that they can hear it.
Right.
So now, when you rent the office space, do you rent the building or do you own the building?
So the building we have now, I own it.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to tell our listeners kind of how that journey went or why you chose to own a building versus,
because
as a business owner, that's always an interesting topic.
Yeah. I've always loved real estate, and mm-hmm. I had an accountant at the time who was kind of looking at my business, and I was just asking her, like, do you have any, recommendations about what I could do? And she's like, well, you're paying a lot in rent. If you could, own your own building, you'd just be paying rent to yourself. And I was like, ooh, mm-hmm. yeah, that sounds good.
Right.
So we looked, this is like back in 2018, we looked for a property for a long time. The commercial market was very tight at the time, and we ended up buying a dentist office. So the dentist had retired, and he owned the building and wanted to sell it. And it was like a complete gut job, like tore down all the walls, like, it looks completely different on the inside. It had never really been remodeled. It was built in the 60s. So that was a very stressful process, just dealing with, zoning and permits and, all those rules that you have to follow. And things kept getting delayed, of course. And then you have surprise things that pop up, like they ripped up the floor and found out the subfloor was, basically rotten because of all the, water coming through the pipes through the floor. And, it's just extra expensive. So it was very much an emotional roller coaster. But once we got in and everything was set up and we started using it, I was just, in love. Like, I'm just like, I need to buy some more buildings because I just love this. I get to make it however I want. We actually built out the walls so they're soundproofed. And it's beautiful. I got to pick the flooring. I got to pick the paint color. Just, setting it up was so fun. And I love it. I'm so glad that I did it. Even though in the pandemic, we haven't really been using it, but we will again one day.
Yes, I think sooner than you think. People are starting to ask me as well, are we back in the office yet?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're in different places, but I do think it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah,
people
sure.
are tired. They're mm-hmm. definitely tired of the Zoom thing.
mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, so very cool. Ted, do I hear you?
Sure.
Nope. There you go.
So,
okay.
You work with, I won't say train the trainer, but you consult healthcare practitioners, correct?
Right, yes.
Have you ever consulted non-healthcare practitioners?
I have not yet, and that's actually something I was always curious about because I was interested to see if it was very similar or very different. I'm guessing it's probably pretty similar.
That was where my question was going, right?
Yeah, I already answered your question.
Yeah, you answered it. You don't have the answer. So what are some of the things a healthcare practitioner should be thinking about, right? So you worked for a company and then you went out on your own. So what were some of the lessons you learned that were really important? And you see that in consulting healthcare practitioners, a lot of people are not aware of those lessons up front that you actually had to go through the journey. You follow me?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, I mean, there were so many things that I learned along the way. I think, too, that, we're not trained as business people. We're going to school to become therapists, and there is no business class. So it's really like having to take a, crash course and, teach yourself all of these things or find a consultant to help you. And what I found is some people just don't. They just think like, oh, I can figure this out. You know, like I can just, you know, Google some things or listen to a few podcasts and I can set up this business. But there's a lot to it. And I think just knowing too what the, you know, kind of what the normal data points are, like so many important things I learned, like what should my budget look like and how much should I pay my staff? You know, I didn't know any of those things. I had no idea how to, you know, 20% of my money should go to expenses. And if it was over that, then it was, you know, probably too much, those kinds of things. Something else I learned too was there's definitely like a threshold for when you start to see the other therapists that you've hired making money for the practice, like you start turning a profit, maybe some of that money starts going towards your own salary. That doesn't happen until you hit about $400,000 a year. And so people start a practice and they hire a couple people and they're like working, you know, twice as much as they were because they're still seeing clients. They're trying to get this group practice going. And they're like, this is terrible. Why am I doing this? And I'm like, just wait, just wait. When you get to $400,000, it'll be so much better. So it's just things like that. Like when people don't know that information, they may start and then they would just quit. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I can come in and say, this is totally normal. And this is why this is happening.
Right.
Right.
Which is reassuring too, because at least they... Right.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, at least they don't feel like they're working for nothing. And they're like, oh, this is never going to end. This sucks.
Right. Right.
You know, and it becomes a breaking point when you have the opportunity to say, okay, this person's going to start making me money now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume a lot of people have their own private practice because they want to be in control of their time. And that's the last, well, initially, that's the last thing that happens. They actually end up spending more time in their business from what you're saying, correct?
Yeah. So in the beginning, yeah, I don't sugarcoat that for anybody. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of trial and error. And I feel like once I hit the 2-year mark, it just got exponentially better. And then when I also figured out that we really needed to have very like robust systems and processes in place that were happening outside of myself, that's when it really felt like, okay, this is, you know, this is its own thing. This isn't just like Allison, like doing all the things and wearing all the hats. Like this is a legitimate business that could run without me. And it was just easy then to keep replicating what we had figured out.
So for people who may not fully comprehend what systems and processes, can you give one or two examples of that? Because what I hear you saying is you put things in place, and if you, for example, were to take a 30-day vacation, your business could still run without you being there.
Yeah, I took a 3-month vacation, and my business ran without
even
me.
Better.
And by
way, even better. Now I'm really hiring you as my consultant.
It wasn't a vacation. It was maternity leave. But I was still gone for 3 months, and the practice ran and did fine, and nothing fell apart.
So awesome.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. Like, we have a very clear process of, like, when somebody calls in for an initial appointment, all the data we collect, how they get scheduled. Like if in the beginning the therapist would be like, oh, I got a referral from a friend of mine and I just stuck them in my schedule. And then like all of this stuff would fall through the cracks because they didn't know they were supposed to ask this question and get a copy of their insurance card and all of that kind of stuff. So I was like, you know, it's great that you've, you know, got this referral, but you need to send it through the admin person because otherwise the system gets messed up. Things like that, and just being very clear about this is how we do it, and it's not just like you do whatever you want. It's like there's a very clear process, and everybody needs to follow it.
Okay.
So
right.
You also have a reputation. Go ahead. No, sorry.
Go ahead. Keep going, Lori. Keep going.
I was going to say you have a reputation for keeping in, I don't know what you call it, keeping clinicians, right? Keeping them happy, keeping staff, being able to offer services. How do you do that? How do you engage and enroll people? And how do you even find clinicians to work?
Yeah, so I look at my role as the CEO to take care of my clinicians. So not that I don't think about the clients, but my first priority is the clinicians. Do they feel valued? Do they feel respected? Do they feel like they're being paid well? Do they feel like they have work-life balance? And I have set up structures within the business to allow that to happen. Unfortunately, you know, all across the country, it's not uncommon that people work in, you know, an agency setting where they're expected to see a bazillion clients and, you know, they keep getting more and more, you know, paperwork requirements piled on them and, you know, nobody cares if you had to stay late to get, you know, eight amount of paperwork done. Like, I think I've taken away a lot of that. And I really have created a place that would have been a place I wanted to work when I was a clinician. I think it also helps too, being a mom and just realizing, you know, what it's like to try and, you know, have a career and have kids. And like, I'm absolutely, you know, family comes first. You know, your kid is sick and you can't come to work. Absolutely. I totally get it. And, you know, I had one of my staff actually say, we have staff meeting over Zoom now. And she's like, you might see my baby because I have to nurse her. I was like, that's totally fine. I would love to see your baby. Like, if you need to feed her, like, please do that. You know what I mean? But I think, like, you know, there's just, like, work environments where that wouldn't be okay. Or that wouldn't be considered, like, professional or whatever. And so, yeah, I'm big on helping people to feel like they have that work-life balance.
Right. That's so awesome. And how do you even find clinicians to work?
Yeah, in the beginning, it was hard. We started out hiring contractors, and so there, you know, there weren't as many people who were okay with being a contractor. You're essentially being self-employed. So at the beginning of 2020, we switched over to W-2 employees and started offering health insurance and PTO time and 401k plan and all of those things. And ever since we did that, it's been, like, explosive. Like, I have no problem hiring therapists now.
That's really awesome. And how many therapists do you employ?
I think I have 30 now. I've lost
track.
That's great. And how many, I guess, I don't know if the rest of the world wants to know this answer, but I'm dying as a mental health practitioner. How many people are on their caseload?
So some of them are full-time, some of them are part-time. I think in total we probably have like 1,100 or 1,200 clients.
Wow. Kudos to you.
Thank you. Yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah, it's been exciting to see the response from the community because I feel like we're obviously serving a need that, you know, wasn't getting served, either just because there weren't enough, you know, practitioners, or the other thing we're really big on is, you know, being really clear in our marketing that we are inclusive and we're, you know, LGBTQ friendly and that kind of thing. And I think there's not a lot of that around here either. So I think that has helped as well, that people feel like, oh, this is a safe, you know, safe space for me to be.
Right. And you're also involved in, I don't know how else to call it, but some charity work or not-for-profit work. You've helped to set up some services for, you want to talk about that? Because that's also interesting.
Yeah, there's a great charity here called the Lancaster Osteopathic Health Foundation. And it sounds like it's, they're talking about medical stuff, but it's actually a children's mental health charity. And so they have all kinds of programs to support children's mental health. And one of the things I got really interested in was maternal mental health. So, you know, pregnancy and postpartum, depression, anxiety, there weren't any practitioners offering those services. back when we started in 2016. So I got to know the executive director through there, and they have a great program where they pay people's co-pays. If they have insurance but can't afford to pay the co-pay to go to therapy, they will fund them if they, you know, meet a certain kind of income requirement. So we participate in that as a provider, and then we also started like a program where we specifically have resources for and training for pregnancy and postpartum mental health, because the research basically shows that if moms are struggling with mental health issues in pregnancy and postpartum, there's a much higher chance that the child's going to have mental health issues like by the age of 5. So it fits really nicely into their mission. So that's been really cool as well to work with them and see that continue to grow.
Yeah, that's so fascinating too. Are there any other charities that you get involved in, or community work, or anything that you do to keep your name out there? Or just because you feel it's a purpose?
Yeah. Something actually we just got awarded the B Corp certification last week. I don't know if you're familiar with that. I can explain that a little bit.
No.
Yeah, so a B Corp certification is basically like kind of like an amendment to your business entity, and you have to meet all of these metrics basically that you're going to, you're going to treat your employees fairly, you're going to pay them a living wage, you're going to think about, you know, how to take care of the environment when you're running your business. You're going to make an effort to buy, supplies or whatever you need from like minority-owned businesses, just things like that. Just being an ethical, you know, good business owner. They call it business as a force for good. So it was quite the process. It took us almost a year to get the certification, but we just got it last week. So one of the things that I've been paying more attention to because of that is, you know, buying things locally. Like we had a leadership retreat, and I bought, you know, little things to put in a goodie bag for the staff, and just, you know, I could have gone to Target or Amazon and ordered stuff, but I, you know, specifically went to like a local shop that was all, you know, local craftspeople who make things, and bought things there. So we're just trying to make more of an effort to do that kind of thing. I told the staff for Christmas this year that they can have us donate some money to a charity of their choice, or they can pick out jewelry that's made by a organization called Revolution Lancaster that helps homeless women. So the women actually make the jewelry, and then they get paid to make the jewelry, and then the, you know, some of the money goes back into funding the program. So yeah, so I'm really excited about that, because, you know, when you have some success, and, you know, your business starts to make money, I think about it as like you're voting with your dollars, right? So like, I could have bought them just, you know, again, something, you know, mass produced or whatever, but instead I was like, you know what, I have $1,500 that I could use, and all of it could go to charity. And so, yeah. And so that kind of thing makes me really happy as a business owner.
Right. That's so awesome. Yeah. It's so nice to give back to like that. It it makes you feel good. And then, you know, your employees feel good about you too. They're like, oh, look at her. You know, she cares.
Yeah. I already got some responses to the email. I just sent it today, and they were like, oh my gosh, this is so cool.
That's so great. Yeah. No, that's huge. And I guess in terms, you had mentioned, you know, your services are inclusive and you specifically market, but what are your specialties? And if someone was looking, you know, they needed services, where are you located and how could they reach you?
Yeah, we have a lot of different specialties now, from obviously having a lot of staff. So we have everything from maternal mental health to trauma. We have some folks who do EMDR. We have folks who do like some eating disorder work, intuitive eating, that whole movement. I have somebody trained in that. Obviously your typical anxiety, depression, life transition issues is something that we're able to work with. We have somebody who sees kids and teens, so it really kind of runs the gamut. So we actually have two websites now. We have a whole arm of the practice that is people who are just doing telehealth, like even after the pandemic is over, they're just still going to do online therapy. So that website is moveforwardonline.com. And then we have our original website, which is moveforwardlancaster.com.
Very cool. The moveforwardlancaster.com is for which?
So that is our website for people who are eventually going to be back in our Lancaster office.
Back in,
seeing clients.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
But we can see anybody
like live and
in
person. You're no longer.
Yeah, right. We're no longer separated by a screen.
Right. You're on camera.
Yeah. Yeah, but we've gotten, we've gotten referrals from all over Pennsylvania, and I just think that's been one of the silver linings of the pandemic. Like, so many more people have access to mental health services now.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that? This is a question that, I guess me and my peers, we've kind of had over and over again. Do you think that Zoom has changed the way that, counseling is seen? Do you think it's productive? Do you think it's the same as seeing someone in person? Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think in the vast majority of cases, it's really the equivalent in terms of effectiveness. And, obviously, you in the beginning, especially, we've all had to sort of think through, like, oh, how do I do this now that we're on Zoom?
Right.
We figured it out. I think there's some instances where, for example, like a person who's in a domestic violence situation, that's probably not ideal for them to be on, a computer at home where their significant other might be. And also I know there was some challenges in the beginning, especially with the practitioners who do EMDR. So I can see how, that might be more effective in the office, depending on how you deliver that service. But I think overall it works really well. Little kids is another example of maybe not the ideal for telehealth. They do better in the office where they can play with toys and all of that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I was just had a conversation with a psychiatrist who said that, he feels safer on the other side of the Zoom because if someone has a gun, they can't shoot him. And I was like, that's an interesting that's interesting. That's not usually my first thought when I'm seeing someone on Zoom, but it probably will be at the forefront of my thoughts these days.
Cool.
But yeah, so I was wondering if anyone has had an experience like that, or if kind of knock on wood been lucky enough not to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So, very interesting.
So, Allison, you, when I asked if you worked with companies outside of mental health, you said no. And you are curious to see if the challenges are universal. So, one of the things that I would say is universal for any business, regardless of the size, is something that I heard you say clear as a bell. You said, you wouldn't have been able to build this company without good people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the question that so many people who are responsible for hiring someone, how do you find good people? What can you talk about? Like, so how did you find good people is a question. And are there things people can look for, whether it's a mental health practitioner or a high-tech person? Like, what are I want to ask your secret sauce, and maybe that's maybe you can't give that away, but I really think that's something valuable, because hiring the right person is such a personal, I don't almost want to say intimate, right? So there's some level of personality analysis, and some people give, you know, actual assessments. But I'm assuming for you to choose good people, you're really good at your craft, which is being able to assess people in general. That's what you do for a living.
Yes.
So can you help people out and talk about how you were able to get good people and what are the things to look for or ask in interviews?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think two things come to mind immediately. One is I had to get really clear on what my values were as a business, because I found that when I was clear on my values, I actually use that in the interview process, and it helps weed out the people who aren't good fits. And it also is easier to see who resonates with the values and who reads them and thinks, oh, this is great. Like, this seems like a great place to work and is like excited about it. So that's always part of the interview process now, is like I tell them about the values, why I started the practice, you know, say, does this resonate with you? So that's number one. And number two would be I had to learn what my, you know, me as a boss, kind of what I was wanted in an employee and what I didn't want. So I am the kind of person who wants my employees to be very independent. I don't want them coming to me every second asking a question or needing to ask permission. So I started talking about that in the interview process. Like, you know, in the beginning, when we were smaller, you might be in the office here all by yourself. Is that okay with you? If it's not, this isn't the place for you. And just being very clear about what the job was and what it wasn't. And also being really clear about the fact that I needed that person to be organized, and I needed them to make sure that they got their progress notes done on time. So every time you see a client, you have to write a progress note. I didn't want to be chasing people down, asking them, where's your progress notes from a week ago? So I am very clear about that in the interview. I actually don't spend that much time talking to them about clinical skills, because by the time they get licensed, I figured they have to be like pretty good at what they're doing, or else nobody would have licensed them. I actually talk to them more about, how do you get your notes done on time? And are you organized? I'm looking to see, are you scattered? And I ask you a question and you go off on 10 different tangents, because that would drive me crazy as a boss. So that person's not a good fit for me.
So you're almost in some ways role playing the job or aspects of the job to see how they manage it in the conversation.
Yes.
Interesting. So are you looking to see how well they can manage stress or pressure during the interview?
Not necessarily. I think it's more the big things I look for are, you know, do you have a clinical interest or experience that fits with our group? The second one is, are you organized? Are you going to get your notes done on time? And really the third thing is do you have good boundaries? Because in our field, it's so important to have good boundaries with clients. You know, it's like very unethical to like become a friend with your client or something like that. And so that's also a really big deal to me, because I'm very clear about we have to have good boundaries with our clients. So I ask them like a particular question, like, let's say, you know, hypothetical question, you know, how would you respond? And it's a boundary type question. I find that you can't teach good judgment. People either have it or they don't. And you're going to be in situations as a therapist where you may have never imagined being in that situation, and you have to have good judgment. And so that's really what I'm looking for.
Okay. All right. And as far as being organized, and some of the questions you're asking, I mean, all the things you're saying are really great. My thought is, and what, you know, someone listening may think is, well, sure, you can ask someone, are they organized? And they'll say, yes, I am. That may be relative. One, it may be relative. Their idea of being organized may be very different from yours.
Right.
Or sometimes they may be stretching the truth. How do you pierce
that? I will specifically say, tell me about your process or your routine around getting your notes done.
Okay.
And so that's how I hear the details of, oh, well, I just leave it till the end of the week. Or, no, I can't leave the office until I know the notes are done, which is what I want to hear.
Okay. All right. Good. Yep. I worked on a, in short, the psychological assessment with a psychiatrist, and I know he was telling me that he'll ask one question two or three different ways for people, you know, just to make sure they're answering honestly.
Right.
People sometimes tend to give you the answer they think you're looking for.
Right. Yeah, we verify it by checking references, too.
Yeah. But I think just people who are responsible for interviewing, I think the things you're saying are very helpful. And also interesting, last week we had a gentleman, a founder of a company that does branding. And one of the things that he said he does with his clients is he gets them crystal clear on their values. So interesting that you're saying the same thing. And so that's what he does, whether he's looking for employees or his clients, getting them crystal clear on their values and then using their values as a platform to brand themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big proponent of that. I think the values can help you in so many ways, not just with hiring, but even, you know, as an early stage entrepreneur, like all of these opportunities were coming to me, or I'd get new business ideas and I'd think like, oh, should we do this or could we do that? And then it was just like there was no sort of like filter for me to decide if it was a yes or a no. And then once I got really clear on my values, it was just like immediately it was like, nope, we're not doing that. It doesn't fit, you know?
Yeah, it helps create boundaries so that you're not everywhere. You know, so,
exactly.
Yeah. Back to the word boundary. And you know, even CEOs of Fortune 500s will say, you know, we can teach skills, but there are values that we can't teach. Like, you said you can't teach people how to have good judgment, but you just want to see how good their judgment is. So there are certain things that you're not going to teach, and they should, like some of the technical aspects. And I like that you said they've already received the training, so someone certified them. So,
right.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's great. So we only have a few minutes left. Do you want to share how they can reach you again?
Yeah, so there's a variety of ways to reach me because I do so many things. The best email to get a hold of me is Allison, and Allison is spelled with one L, at practiceofthepractice.com. If they want to check out the Sarah Suite website, it's thera-suite.com. And then my practices, moveforwardonline.com and moveforwardlancaster.com. Trying to remember if I forget anything. Oh, and the virtual assistant company I have is actually the same name. It's also Move Forward, but it's moveforwardvirtualassistants.com. So we didn't talk too much about that, but we serve practice owners. Yeah, we serve practice owners who need administrative assistant services. So I started that business back in 2018, and it has grown along with, you know, just with the demand on mental health, especially because of the pandemic, that business has grown as well. So,
Do the virtual assistants do billing? Do they do receptionist work? Do they do marketing? Like what, or do they do everything?
Yeah, they do scheduling. And that's really the biggest request that we get is, you know, they want somebody to answer their phones and schedule people because they're in sessions all day. We also do some things around insurance. We don't actually do the billing, but we'll do some of the other tasks related to billing. And we do some, like, posting to social media and things like that.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, you've covered every area for a therapist.
Yes.
Actually, I have a quick question. You were talking about women with postpartum. Have you seen an uptick in the your services for women dealing with postpartum since the pandemic?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, because I think that, you know, one of the big ways to help women through that time, especially if they're struggling with postpartum depression or anxiety, is to, you know, just offer support, you know, have someone come and, you know, hold the baby for an hour so you can go take a shower or whatever is going to help you feel like a human being again. And, you know, especially in the beginning when we were also isolated and quarantined, like there were a lot of families who were just like, you know, mom and dad were at home with the newborn and like they couldn't ever have anybody come over and watch the baby, which is, you know, really stressful to be on all the time and never have a break. So, yeah, it's definitely affected that population.
Interesting. And how about men? A couple of years ago, I had a OBGYN come on and said there are men who suffer from that also. Have you found that?
Yeah, I see that more and more in the, you know, in the media and kind of recognized in the, you know, counseling community that it also does affect men. We don't get as many of those requests as we do the moms, but you know, I do think there is validity to that.
Okay, great. Well, you've been
awesome.
A wonderful guest on our show.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been great talking about all of these different things, and I'm happy to share my knowledge, and thanks for the great questions.
Yeah, and you're such an inspiration, so thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Impact on the, you know, community with mental health and just helping other practitioners build up their practices and build their, you know, business to fit their lifestyle and support other women, which is, you know, exciting to me.
Are you always looking for practitioners?
Yeah, we are always hiring therapists.
Good.
Yep.
So people can use the same contact information for that.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Perfect.
Yep.
Great.
Send them my way.
Very cool.
We never have
Very
a shortage
awesome.
Of clients.
Well, that's good. They keep coming, right?
Yes. Like, yeah, especially since the pandemic. Yeah, definitely. Just been more stressful for people all around, so lots of people need support.
Excellent. Well, Allison, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for everyone for listening. Allison, you have a great evening, and we'll be back next Thursday with another guest.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Have a good night, everyone. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Good night. Goodbye.